morning. Please be seated. Welcome to the Court of Appeals. The date is January 23rd, 2020. We have four matters on for oral argument. Two of them are going to be by ITV, so we will recess after the first two. Our first case is in re the custody of RTR, CTR, and SCTR. Robbie Romero, petitioner versus Stacey Ann Thunder. Respondent. Each side will have 15 minutes for argument. The appellant will have additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if chooses to use it. We ask that each attorney identify themselves before beginning their presentation. You may begin when ready.
Robert Manson, Your Honor, appearing on behalf of Appellant Robbie Romero. Your Honor, this case started out, obviously, as a custody matter brought up in Anoka County before Judge Frederickson. The court had a number of days of trial. My client was unrepresented during that period of time. It is our position that the court clearly erred in finding or awarding sole legal custody to the mother, as well as not allowing anything but supervised parenting time to my client and reunification therapy.
Counsel, it seems to me that the supervised nature of the parenting order was due to the findings regarding how Mr. Romero treated the children. Would you agree with that?
I would argue that that's not entirely
just accurate. Just an upper-minute, not whether he loved those children or not, but how he treated them physically.
I think, Your Honor, we have concerns, A, with the credibility or the veracity of those statements, but even more so, Your Honor, those findings we don't feel would justify reunification therapy and or supervised parenting time. A couple of things. One, again, the claims as to any abuse towards the children were certainly very contradictory. Eric Thunder had testified that it was an awkward handoff. Additionally, there was never any allegations of care or inappropriate care to the children until this matter was started in 2016. When this matter was started in the tribal court, the mother did not make any allegations of abuse. There was no reported allegations of abuse, despite the fact that these children lived with him, with mother's consent, for 2 or 3 years. We feel these allegations came up quite a bit after. And when you look at the evaluation, and while we have certain questions about the veracity of the evaluation that was done by Ms. Larkin, when you look at her evaluation, none of the children expressed fear of father. None of the children, one of them was has stated they would like to see their dad anywhere, anytime. None of them indicated they didn't want to see their father. My client had supervised parenting time. There's no indication that that didn't go well. He had, I think, 2 or 3 sessions at Family Wise, another 5 sessions with Steve O'Neill. And those sessions went well, Your Honor. There's no indication, really, that my client, certainly at this point in time, would be an endangerment to the children. You have to determine that right now the children weren't showing fear. They weren't claiming they didn't want to see him. Normally in reunification therapy, Your Honor, what we see are children who are just adamant they do not want to see a parent. Reunification therapy, where you have children that are expressing no fear of a parent, children that have not reported themselves certainly any domestic abuse, you know, that occurred to them or any significant domestic abuse they may have seen, it becomes very concerning. There's just no support for that recommendation at all. Concern, though, is that it is right in line with what the mother requested, who totally controlled this evaluation. That's where we have another difficulty with that evaluation, is that Judge Frederickson denominated as a neutral evaluator when it very clearly was not. She apparently...
Did your client choose not to participate in an evaluation, Mr. Manson?
My client indicated to me, I was not present during the early part of this, did not handle it, but from what he indicated is that he was more than willing to participate in the evaluation, even the first one, that he had brought a motion for it early on, and he feels it was actually Ms. Thunder that had had delayed the process.
Well, that seems contrary to the court's findings, that he requested to not be required to participate in the evaluation.
And again, Your Honor, we believe that the record and the earlier motions in the case would certainly negate that particular argument. But at the end of the day, there's no indication here that my client did not participate with Ms. Larkin. What did come out very clearly is that Ms. Larkin was informed of whom or to whom she should talk, and my client was not one of them. The mother very clearly indicated that she controlled all aspects, as well as Ms. Larkin, that she controlled all aspects of that evaluation. Ms. Larkin was told, again, whom she could communicate. She never reached out to my client. There's no indication that my client would have not participated in any type of evaluation. She didn't seek out any collaterals, Your Honor. What she ended up doing was just doing a very one-sided, hired gun type of evaluation that then purported to be a neutral or purported to make recommendations with only half of the information. It's kind of the old garbage in, garbage out in that particular case.
Couldn't your client, I mean, if that's the case, couldn't your client have done the same? It seems like he made no effort to obtain an evaluation of his own had he believed this one was one-sided.
I'm not sure if my client had the funds. And then also, at that point in time, this was done right at the last minute prior to trial. Again, my client disputes, you know, that finding. I believe he'd indicated me as an earlier motion that in the record where he had actually addressed delay from the opposing party. But regardless, this evaluation was not done until right before trial. It was done in 2 weeks. And again, there's no indication that my client would have had the ability or time. I think more importantly, Your Honor, if the court is going or the trial court is going to rely on a custody evaluation, it really needs to be one that is balanced, especially, again, when the court keeps referring to it as a neutral evaluation. There's nothing neutral about an evaluation that doesn't talk to one party, Your Honor.
I don't understand that argument, though, because this trial actually took place over the course of many different days, over the course of 11 months. So how would he not have had an opportunity to obtain an evaluation if that would have been, if he was so opposed to the one that was done by the mother here?
Typically, Your Honor, two things. One, my client was pro se. I understand he's held to the same standards as a regular attorney, and I understand that's the concept, but as a practicality, very hard to do. Second of all, and again, I'm kind of guessing at this point, Your Honor, I wasn't there, but normally once you start a trial, it's very hard to start introducing new witnesses, new evidence. And I don't know if he had the knowledge or the wherewithal to even do that. Regardless of whether or not he gets his own hired gun or whatever you want to call it, I don't know that that lessens the credibility, the fact he didn't get somebody else in there, that adds any greater credibility to what the custody evaluator did in this particular case. And again, when you look at the evaluation, she recommends supervised parenting time. She really doesn't say the children are endangered. She's looking more at the length of time that the children had gone, and yet my client did have the supervised time. He did, in fact, spend time with the children. That did go well. The concept of supervised time, again, normally you're looking at a fairly high level of endangerment to put supervised parenting time on a child or between a parent and child. The restrictions are... I'm not making a constitutional argument, but you have a constitutional right to the custody and care of your children. And in this particular case, most of your cases indicate there has to be a fairly high degree of danger. And that just isn't articulated in this particular case. There may be some findings or some allegations that many years ago, when the children were younger, that he may have been inappropriate or yelled at them or what have you. But there's nothing in line, again, with the supervised visits he had now or indications that at this point in time that the children would have been endangered by supervised parenting time with him. I think the evaluator said something about erring on the side of caution. Well, erring on the side of the caution or presumption that supervision is appropriate really isn't the appropriate standard. It's whether or not children will be endangered. And that clearly wasn't the case here. Additionally, what you had, again, children didn't indicate any fear. I don't believe anyone, anywhere in the transcript indicates that the children are afraid of their father, which goes again to the reunification therapy. I think there's a mention about...
I don't think that's entirely clear. For instance, Savannah testified that she worries about her sibling's safety and her father's care.
Well, two things. One, Savannah's a non-biological child, that what she thinks or what she's concerned about, what we're talking about is my client's biological children.
I understand, but she's observed, and she expressed her thoughts.
Again, Your Honor, those are, you know, testimonies from many years ago. My client did have the supervised time, and they don't echo the biological children's thoughts. When they talked again to the evaluator, they said, well, they're comfortable with what they have now, but none of them expressed, you know, any fear of my client or any adamant, I don't want to see him, I hate him, what have you. And that's what should be, again, the standard. It's that endangerment, and it's that whole concept of with his children and how that plays into it. We have a number of issues, again, with credibility of witnesses. Savannah is the mother's child, totally dependent upon her.
Didn't the district court make credibility determinations, though, Mr. Manson, so that, I mean, we give great deference to those credibility determinations here. And so, you know, if that's what you're going to argue, it would be really helpful if you could point to parts of the record that would show that the court erred in making those credibility determinations, because it can make a decision about who it chooses to believe or who thinks it's credible or not. And that's not something that normally we as an appellate court can second guess.
I think the court can look at things as a total, obviously, whether or not it feels that there's been a mistake made. Again, the difficulty with this case is that there's no corroboration of any of these statements. We have some very bare statements. My client, you know, did deny it. And again, we do have just kind of the common sense that if these things were going on, that the mother certainly would not have allowed the children to have remained with father down in New Mexico, and yet she did. You know, these claims, again, none of these claims were contemporaneous with that time. None of these claims were made in the first tribal documents filed by mother. You know, these claims all came up in the context of a case that started in 2016, and fairly late into that process that these claims came up. They really weren't raised too much earlier.
Counsel, you made the point that in terms of supervision, that part of this is reunification therapy, too.
Well, that was ordered, Your Honor.
But he opposes that as well.
He opposes certainly the need for it, that... There's no basis in the record at all for reunification therapy, Your Honor. There's no indication that these children are per se estranged from their father. Again, we have at least one of them saying, I will see him anywhere, anytime. I don't see anything in the record that these children have refused to see their father, are refusing to see their father, or the incidences that you would have that would require reunification therapy. Reunification therapy is there when you have children that are estranged. We do have concerns with the mother's behavior with the children. The father did have concerns. Mr. Romero had concerns about the children being alienated from him through this process, certainly, that the mother, you know, did not allow contact. And I understand that the opposing parties argument is, but she had sole legal physical custody, she really didn't have to foster a relationship with him. And I think that kind of fails. I think even if you have sole legal physical custody, you certainly should be fostering a relationship between a parent and child.
Part of when I read over the findings and conclusions that come away with is, though, that your client's his own worst enemy. I mean, he opposes supervised parenting time, reunification therapy, and the judge says that he demonstrated a quick temper during the proceedings, and she observed it.
And again, I wasn't present during the proceedings, so it's hard to weigh in on that. I would note, too...
But that would fit with some of the anger issues that led to the children's perhaps being treated poorly.
Again, but the children didn't report being treated poorly. The children themselves didn't refer to that. You have a pro se party, there's a certain frustration level that occurs in trial. I would note, I don't know how the judge was feeling. Unfortunately, Judge Frederickson at that point in time was going through chemo and having a lot of difficulties in her private life.
Quite frankly, I don't think that's a fair argument at all.
No. Yeah.
There's nothing in the record to support that, Counsel.
Okay.
I think you have to be careful about that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was a great loss when we lost her. But, Your Honor, I don't know. I wasn't there, Your Honor. I know that perceptions differ in what one person might view as anger. Another party or pro se party may just be frustration at the process. But again, what happens in court in that process doesn't necessarily translate over to the children.
Was it reasonable for the district court? It seems like the district court did, in crafting its order, though, take into account the great distance that these parties live from one another. And whether the visitations or time went well or not, I mean, the fact is your client has seen these children about 7 times in the last 8 years. Here in Minnesota. So, I mean, was it reasonable for the district court to take into account the great distance that the children would have to travel and if they were to be allowed to visit in New Mexico?
I don't believe so, Your Honor, or the court could certainly have done some type of short transitional type of process in that. This is a place that the children were familiar with. It's not like they're going to New York for the first time. They're familiar with New Mexico. They're familiar with the area, had resided there for a substantial period of time. And we have people that live long distances away that you normally do have that visitation. And then the 25% minimum, too, I believe should have applied in this case.
All right, Counsel, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Respondent.
Good morning, I am Heidi Drobnik, representing the respondent in these matters. This is an appeal of an initial custody determination between unwed parents and governed by Minnesota Statute 257.541, which, and in initial determinations, the best interest factors of 518.17 apply to these initial determinations. The district court awarded the mother sole legal and sole physical custody. They also awarded the father supervised visits with a reunification therapy component to that. The appellant makes sweeping arguments in his brief or that the district court erred by awarding sole legal and sole physical custody. And how he approaches this is he attacks separate findings of facts of the district court claiming error. And by focusing on small or narrow portions of the evidence which might support his theory or would contradict the conclusions made by the court. However, that analysis is limiting and ignores great sections of the record. A review of the entire record shows that each and every finding of fact was supported by evidence in the record. And the appellant distracts from this analysis by attempting to focus on small portions of the record to drive his theory of the case. This trial was extensive. It was 5 days. There were 7 witnesses, and there's almost 800 pages of transcript. It went over a course of, it began in 2016, and it's 2019 now. The respondent mother provided extensive evidence of best interests, and the appellant provided limited, if any, evidence of best interests, and the trial court address this in particular with him right on the record because of his continued pursuit of just the alienation issue. The trial court made 177 finding of facts and conclusions of law that addressed each and every best interest factor and how that facts weighed into her decision. Both parties, importantly, both parties stipulated to all the evidence, stipulated to the witness, particularly Shar Larson, and stipulated to her report at the first day of the court. Appellant's initial brief selectively chose facts, and so the respondent did in her brief extensively lay out some of the facts, expanded on those facts, but also what a respondent did is that she made extensive cites to the transcripts, so each and every finding of fact that appellant attacked, we laid out in the brief where the transcript and the evidence support those finding of facts that the trial court made. And I'm not going to repeat those right here. But this, all of the issues raised by appellant are resolved by a simple application of the standard of review. There is substantial evidence in the record to support each and every finding of fact by the court. Interestingly, the appellant, petitioner, concedes sole physical custody both in his brief and during the trial, and we've laid out in the brief, page 12, where that happened in the trial, where he conceded it a couple different times. But then in his conclusions on page 23, he is contesting the joint legal custody. He'd like sole to be joint. But he requests sole legal custody to respondent. He does request extensive visitation. He is more objecting to the supervised component and the reunification.
Well, it seems like in coming to that remedy, the district court did rely to a large degree on the evaluation of Ms. Larson. And appellant argues that, you know, that was there for the court to do that because it was one-sided, that he wasn't contacted about it. He wasn't asked for collaterals and things like that. What is your response to that?
Well, you know, I think the justice has kind of stated right. He's his worst own enemy. The district court, Judge Fredrickson, did encourage him to participate in this joint custody evaluation. He motioned for it. And he was the one at the late date in January who requested to be relieved of it. He decided that he made a number of demands of the custody evaluator and the mother, and then decided that he had a couple visits and they showed that he didn't need this custody evaluation. So he made his own determination. And the judge, right on the record, encouraged him not to do that but to participate in it. Well, his actions put my client in a very difficult situation because the custody the court would not have the ability to have the voice of the children. And what they thought of his parenting style and what they have observed. And there are, contrary to the arguments that were put forth here, a careful review of the record shows that there were concerns that were raised by the children of the treatment that appellant had of the children, both joint and non-joint, and some of the fear that the older children had for the younger children because they had been in those situations. Plus, the sister had, Desiree was a witness, and she had witnessed his parenting style, which is screaming, getting in people's face, berating, till people cried every day. And so, it was important for my client to give a voice to the children, so the court really understood, beside from her, everything that was going on. And the court had allowed each party to hire a evaluator or a guardian ad litem, is what she called it. And contrary to the way that appellant characterized this, this was not a joint custody evaluation. He refused to participate in that. He refused. And Judge Fredrickson said, I will have a difficult time evaluating your ability to parent if you don't have this. And he said he understood that. And so he refused to do that. And my client did what the judge allowed, was to get a Char Larson, who is a very talented and experienced guardian ad litem. She's the head of the guardian ad litem in the courts in the 10th district that she's in. And she interviewed and went and gave a voice to the children. And that was very important. Now, Mr. Romero's first day, he only testified his witnesses on the first day. We had many other days, and he had over a year to prepare to rebut any of this testimony. You know, he agreed to admit the evidence, and now it seems like, even though he stipulated to the evidence, now he's complaining, and he should not be allowed to do that. Even though he's, you know, he's got some heartstring arguments about being pro se, he was warned by the court that this might not be what is helpful to the court in the way that he handled those types of things. And in particularly, I'd like to point out that one of the reasons Judge Fredrickson didn't expand the visitation beyond supervised, he asked for supervised visitation at the very beginning. He asked for it. That's what he wanted. And it didn't get expanded because he refused to exercise it. And what he did was he was pressuring and bullying my client in an attempt to go outside of what the court orders, and then calling it parental alienation. So he wouldn't exercise what he requested, and then he pointed to my client as that she was, because she wouldn't agree to something outside the court orders, as parental alienation. And so it was a bullying tactic Judge Fredrickson did observe him become very agitated during the court proceedings, and was reluctant because he refused to cooperate with court orders to expand the supervised visitation. The other thing I'd like to point out about that is that both my client and the children would like to have a relationship. They're concerned. My client is concerned because the children were little at that time. They're bigger now, about not being able to voice the things that may go on. And so because of the visits, there were 2 years here in between where he's never even visited them or called them, 2 years. And so the children are reluctant. They don't have a relationship with him. The youngest has never been in his care or spent longer than a couple hours with him. And the youngest is 8, but was an infant or 4 at this time, or maybe even younger. To remove an infant from their mother, the only caregiver they have, and go to states away where is not in the best interest of these children. And so that was the concern, was for the reunification therapist to make recommendations. And so had Mr. Romero engaged, we may be in a very different place right now. They may be visiting. If he had engaged in the supervised visits, if he had engaged in the things that were provided to him rather than objecting to them, he might have a better relationship with his kids. We may be having unsupervised visits. They may be visiting him in the summer. But it is at this point in time, the children have not seen him for almost, a couple times, a couple hours, a handful of times over the course of 8 years. They're not comfortable going, down there. And so once again, I turn to the standard on review. All of the evidence, there's substantial evidence, not just the evidence that's been pointed out by appellant. So I would request that the court uphold the determination of the, or the findings, or the decision of the trial court, and as substantial evidence in the record exists to support the findings, and the other complaints that are being made are credibility determinations, and the court made particularized findings on each best interest factor. The court's findings are supported by substantial evidence, and the court has broad discretion to decide custody determinations and credibility determinations under the standard of review. So we ask to uphold the district court decision as no errors were committed. Thank you.
All right, thank you, counsel. Rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honors. Basically, a couple of things in the argument by opposing counsel. One is that my client did engage in the supervised parenting time. She indicates that if he had engaged in this custody evaluation, things might be different now. But he did engage in the supervised parenting time. And again, there was nothing negative reported to the court about that through Mr. O'Neill, through FamilyWise. He had no opportunity to engage with Ms. Larkin because, again, she testified that she was told who she was to contact, and my client was not on that list. The courts may be aware that when you do custody evaluations, it's very unusual to have a half eval being done. A qualified custody evaluator almost always at least reaches out to the opposing party. It's highly unusual to have them just refuse, or I should say not even attempt to get the full facts. If they don't have the full facts, they can't make proper recommendations to the court, and that's exactly what occurred here. I would still argue that endangerment is the reason or should be the reason for having supervised. And there's still, when you look in the basis, there's no basis again for reunification therapy. In this case, we believe that that should certainly be reversed. The parenting time statute, Minnesota Statute 518.175, does appear to apply. It states in any proceedings for dissolution or legal separation subsequent to the commencement of the proceeding and continuing thereafter, the court shall, upon request of either parent, grant such parenting time as will enable the child and parent to maintain a relationship. I understand that the Todnum case that was cited by opposing counsel seems to differentiate between the two of them, but the statute itself makes it clear that that is a separate assessment on parenting time, and it does provide for a 25% minimum. At this point in time, that certainly wasn't addressed by the appellate court. They didn't feel it was appropriate. I believe the court had indicated distance involved, things of that nature. But we have distance all the time, Your Honor. And that does
Counsel,
not
I have two questions.
Pardon me?
I have two questions. One you've just addressed. I think 518.17 is what's applicable here. But you talk about Ms. Larson not contacting your client. Was that what you said?
Correct, Your Honor.
Finding 84 says petitioner requested to be relieved of his obligation to participate in the custody evaluation. The court granted his request. Petitioner chose not to hire a parenting evaluator. It appears to me there's a pattern here of your client opting out and then being upset when things didn't go his way, both literally and figuratively. But your response?
The thing at that point in time, Your Honor, is that refers to an earlier custody evaluation. I'm not sure, again, wasn't there at the time, to be candid, but my client, again, had felt that the mother had not participated. But at the end of the day, Your Honor, that does not obviate an expert, any expert, from at least attempting to reach out. In this case, this is different, can be differentiated, because she was told exactly who to contact and basically told not to contact my client. It'd be a different thing, I think, if she had contacted my client had said no at that point in time. But she didn't even do that, Your Honor. What she did, again, is essentially take only part of the facts and then purport to make an expert recommendation as to what's in the best interest of the children. And that just isn't appropriate in any way, shape, or form for an evaluator to do that. It does not give the court the balanced look. It does not allow any response or rebuttal. And again, that's the difference here, is Ms. Larkin was essentially advised not to contact anyone beyond who the mother had on her list. She was a hired gun. And at that point in time...
And he could have hired a gun too, correct?
He may have been able to. I don't know what his financial resources were at that point in time. They aren't cheap. I don't know how much Ms. Larkin was paid. I think it might be indicated in the record. But at the end of the day, Your Honor, a hired gun's a hired gun, and an evaluation to be properly relied upon needs both sides. And that's a difficulty that I had, again, was the trial court consistently telling it was a neutral, and it wasn't. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel. Thank you both. The matter will be taken under advisement. An opinion will issue within 90 days. The next matter is Ortner versus Ortner.